Some people like Chris Emma.
We are two of them, Matt Spiegel, Anthony Herron,
right
here on 670 The Score. Quite fond of him. The other guy told him to lay off the honey buns, and I thought that was uncalled for. That's not the way we talk to teammates and colleagues around this place anymore. Chris Emma joins us right now on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Chris, what's up, man? Welcome in. Big news-breaking kind of day here on The Score, isn't it?
What's up, guys? Yeah, the 53-man roster is set in initial form. More roster moves to come, the churn to follow in the next few days, but the Bears have a 53-man roster.
Yes, they do. The headline for those who have not been able to pay attention, who made the team from your perspective before we get to the cuts, the waves, and stuff like that? Who made the team?
I think there were a lot of eyes on the name of Velus Jones Jr., who obviously became kind of a Hard Knocks darling, had a strong showing for the most part in the preseason, and made this big position switch. He made the roster. He is listed officially as a wide receiver, though we know they're going to use him plenty out of the backfield as well. They really like what Velus Jones brings to that mix. So he's in. Frankly, I think I've said it many times on this program the last 6 weeks, whatever it's been now, that I did not think he was going to be on the roster. And to his credit, like, he looks good as a running back. He's got the kind of skill set they need, and he earned his way there. So that's certainly the name that everybody's kind of paying attention to. A couple key designations as well for the injured reserve, with Larry Borum going on, as well as Jacob Martin. Again, more monster maneuvering coming. The Bears need a long snapper, too. That's another note to pass along. Patrick Skills is expected to go on IR, a short-term deal, though. It could keep him out into October. The Bears will need to find a long snapper. One name to keep an eye on, I think, is Scott Daly, who was with the Lions for the last 3 years, former Notre Dame product, or Notre Dame product and local product as well, and a guy I think could be the pick for the Bears.
I just realized, by the way, Ant, real quick, when the Spiegel and Manley show took a team-building trip down to South Bend to see them play against North Carolina, when Mitch Trubisky was on the bench, by the way, before he became the starter, we met Scott Daly, the long snapper, a Patrick Manley disciple, and who is not these days. So if it is indeed Scott Daly, that's a guy who learned under the tutelage of Patrick Manley.
Did the Manley Award exist back then? Was he a nominee for it?
I think he was pre-Manley Award.
Okay, yeah.
We went and hung out with him after the game a little bit. Much respect, deservedly so.
That particular trip. Dante Pettis, I didn't know, Emma, that he was banged up. I thought he had returned from injury and finished out the preseason in fine fashion. How is he on IR all of a sudden? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, well, it went down late. Forgive me, I don't have the exact occasion of that injury, but he went down and it opened up a competition to DeAndre Carter, who was kind of fighting with Pettis for one of those roster spots, a wide receiver. DeAndre Carter, I think, is going to be one of your primary returners of this group, a reliable veteran, although he had a couple of tough moments in the preseason. But this is a guy I think they're going to really lean on in that role. And who knows, maybe he can play a role in offense as well.
So, yeah, I think it was the practice just before that last preseason game, but still, it wasn't realized that it was going to be kind of this severe. How about in terms of the secondary, surprises or not from your perspective on the folks who got cut, waived, released, and the folks who did make the team? Chris.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Reddy Stewart made quite an impression in that preseason finale. I think people were putting him on their roster, hoping for him at least to make this team. But, man, that cornerback group is stacked. That safety group is pretty well set as well. Greg Stroman's another name, a guy who had some good moments for the Bears and somebody who's really put out a strong display throughout this preseason. Not on the roster. Released as a veteran, vested veteran, which means he's free to sign anywhere. I'm sure the Bears would love to get him on the practice squad if they can, but they're pretty well set with that group of six at corner. Look, you got three really strong starters up there with Jalen Johnson, Tyreek Stevenson, and Kyler Gordon. But the other three, and Terrell Smith, Josh Blackwell, and Jamin Jones, those are three guys who could be starting for any other team as well. So I think that's the strongest position group on this roster, and it's kind of reflected with some of the difficult decisions made.
Yeah, Jalen Jones, every time that he's played, has looked solid, and they got to feel good about him as an undrafted free agent acquisition from a couple years ago. So now they've got him locked and loaded.
And Micah Baskerville has been really impressive throughout the preseason when he's had the opportunity to make some plays. He's been able to showcase that as well. But Noah Sewell seemingly makes the initial 53-man roster. And he was just a fifth-round pick last year. So you understand they don't want to give up on someone they invested draft capital in from last season who's shown some physical abilities. But did that surprise you at all, given how banged up Noah Sewell's been, Chris?
I could have made a case from either way. I think it ultimately comes down to the idea that this is one of their own draft picks. This is a developmental prospect, a guy who they see a high ceiling for still. I mean, look, he was a big-time prospect going to Oregon and just never quite lived up to that potential in place. They got a really good linebackers coach in Dave Borgonzi that they believe in a lot. And it helps when you've got two established starters, that tandem of Edmonds and Edwards. You got a guy in Jack Sanborn you really believe in. You're able to take a guy like Noah Sewell and keep him on your roster to continue that development track. So I guess I'm not surprised. Ultimately, here's the other thing, guys. Look, like, the bottom of this roster is still not quite there yet. Like, and that's to be expected. They've gone through three off seasons now under the watch of Ryan Poles. The roster turnover has led to a very strong top of the depth chart. You feel really good about the guys that you have leading the way for this team, but they're still lacking the bottom part of the roster. And that's going to take more time. It's going to take more off seasons, but it's going to take more creative moves in terms of the waiver wires and what's out there and the continued evolution that a roster has throughout the course of a season. So, look, I made my first and only 53 projection last week following the preseason game. And when you really lay it out there, you kind of get a sense that some of these decisions, like, not overly difficult. I know Ryan Poles talked about how this should be a tough team to make, and I think it was, but you're still lacking quality depth in a lot of spots, and that kind of reflects throughout some of these decisions.
I want to get to one other position group, but where do you suspect that they might look? And I can ask this of both you, Ant, and first you, Chris, Emma. What position group might they look at some of the waived folks? Because we're seeing a lot of names out there at skill positions, but I don't know that they'll be looking there offensively. What position groups do you think they might look at in terms of the bottom of the roster if they're going to look around the league?
Yeah, I think defensive line for sure. I mean, they're still, you made two moves for that last week, getting Daryl Taylor and Chris Williams. Again, a pass rusher and a defensive tackle, but there's still a lot more needed. They really need to upgrade the depth of those positions because you don't have that. That's a position where you're rotating guys and you don't have great rotation set. You got some good guys and you got some guys you really hope can emerge. When you talk about Dominic Robinson, Austin Booker, Daniel Hardy, guys like that. But you still really need to add better depth of those spots. So I do think they're going to be looking at those spots when they get to the waiver wire here. And 11 a.m. tomorrow, keep that point in time in mind because that's when these waiver claims are submitted.
Well, you know, you mentioned Daniel Hardy. He makes the team, at least as of right now. So Daniel Hardy makes the team. Of course, Austin Booker makes the team. And Dominic Robinson makes the team. I got to say, and brought him up yesterday, the three players who I was wondering and kind of hoping that I would see Ryan Poles cut bait on some of his own draft picks. Now they're all here. Dominic Robinson is here. Noah Sewell. I mean, you mentioned Baskerville. There were folks saying that Carl Jones Jr. had played well enough to probably deserve some consideration. But Noah Sewell makes the team. And, of course, Velus Jones. So all three of those kind of heartstring guys for Ryan Poles all make this team initially.
And Velus in a different position than Noah Sewell, where Noah Sewell's been banged up for a lot of his Bears career so far, and he's only in his second season. It's year three for Velus Jones, and he's been active a lot. He hasn't been injured very much. He just hadn't played well. He's missed a lot of opportunities to make plays, and so do you develop out of that is the question to me that lingers with Velus Jones. It's not like he hasn't had his opportunities, and maybe he was thrust into the punt returning thing earlier than he should have been, but he failed at that pretty miserably, and now they're switching positions. He's shown some potential at running back, but he's got to showcase a lot more playmaking ability, the ability to seize the moment in a way that he hasn't up to this point. And I'm not ruling it out, but again, this is a squad that's ready to compete to win games, to win big games right now. So it's a roll of the dice if Velus Jones is going to be a guy who's trusted to be in a key spot because he just hasn't shown a knack for rising up in those positions. Noah Sewell, you know, it's his second year in the NFL, and he's been hurt a good bit. But to Emma's point, he's a very gifted athlete who was one of the top players in the country. I mean, Velus Jones was one of the top players in the country when he came out of high school too. But you know, Noah Sewell, there's a lot of meat on the bone to still evaluate what he could potentially do.
Speaks, I got one other name for you as well. When you talk about a draft pick that did make the team, that's Doug Kramer, who's been now going into his third season. I don't know if I would have forecasted that initially, but talk to people around the Bears, and he really impressed them. He showed strong development track, and he looks like a guy who's still arrow pointing up. He earned the team's faith. They're keeping 10 offensive linemen right now, in addition to 10 defensive linemen. You're going to have to stash one away. You're going to have to get rid of somebody because you do have to add that long snapper still once you – I take that back. No, because they're placing Patrick Skills on IR, so you don't have to make that move. So you got 10 defensive linemen, 10 offensive linemen. Kramer's a guy who has really stood out. Bill Murray as well has earned the admiration of guys like Matt Eberflus and the coaching staff. So, yeah, you're deep in that in those two positions, and you feel really good about some of the young guys coming along.
Yeah, and we were able to confirm a couple of weeks ago, this is What About Bob era Bill Murray. That's like a solid character actor, can't necessarily be trusted to carry the film on his own at that point, but really, as long as you give him a good, solid co-star, he's going to be totally fine. So Doug Kramer... that's your backup center as of right now. Ryan Bates injured, but and probably going to be inactive for week one. Is that the thought? Doug Kramer needs to be here and might be active for week one as a backup center.
So, yeah, and let me backtrack on something. I'm getting lost in my mind with the roster turner. So you release Kari Blasen game. The hope is to bring him back and sign him back. Mm-hmm. So you will have to waive somebody. I do think you're going to be waiving one of those offensive linemen. You place Patrick Skills on IR, add your new long snapper to the mix. So, yeah, you form the roster that way. There's some decisions to be made. And as we know, waiver wire's coming. So they're going to be aggressive, I think, once again. They've been aggressive the last couple of years in these decisions, and the roster turn continues on from there.
And I would imagine that a backup center might be the spot that they would be targeting if there's a veteran available there. You know, a veteran starter is going to be difficult to come by unless there's just some shocking cap casualty that somebody lets a guy go. But, you know, at this point, you're invested enough in Coleman Shelton. He's been getting all the reps as the starting center for the majority of the offseason here. So they got to feel okay about Coleman Shelton being the starter.
So as I'm looking around today at cuts around the league, I'm not really worried about the quarterbacks, which is a lovely place to be, feeling good, obviously, about Caleb Williams and about Tyson Bagent as your two. So I see Nate Sudfeld cut. I'm not worried about that. As I look around, I see running backs cut. Hey, Royce Freeman got released in Dallas.
Rolls-Royce Freeman.
You know, I wonder, should the Bears be looking at that? No, I think they're okay. They're going to keep, I mean, they're obviously keeping DeAndre Swift. They're keeping Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson. Travis Homer as well, a guy they do like on special teams. And we'll see if the fullback comes back, plays in game two. That means you're going to have five of those guys. It'll be an interesting kind of moment. But I will look around for centers. I will look around for, you know, backup centers, as you mentioned. Carl Lawson is a guy got picked up by the Cowboys in training camp and then released. Edge rusher, you know, do we look around for a veteran edge rusher like that to maybe bring in to bolster the D-line?
It would certainly be nice. I think they at least have enough right now. They've seen production in the preseason. They've added production from other teams in Daryl Taylor. So, I mean, there's enough production, especially on the edge on the defensive front, where you can never have enough, but they're in a comfortable space with the edge of the D-line, more so than the interior with Zach Pickens being banged up here. But the offensive line is where I'm more concerned, especially with the center position. Not, you know, if everybody was healthy, I'd feel good about having Coleman Shelton and Ryan Bates and giving Shane Waldron an opportunity to figure out how to piece that together. But with Ryan Bates being banged up, as much as, you know, I like Doug Kramer's potential, developmental guy, I feel good for that story with him coming out of the Illini, but if he's your backup center for game one, then until he's proven something in regular season NFL action, then you might have a hole there.
Our guy Chris Emma on the line with us for a couple more minutes here on the score. In terms of the quarterbacks, do you suspect they'll try to get Austin Reed or Brett Rypien onto the practice squad as a third guy?
Yeah, I think so. And look at, I think they like the idea of having a sounding board for a young quarterback, but they also really like Austin Reed. I think they see him as a good guy to have in that meeting room. Somebody who's been certainly close to Caleb Williams. So I think he could be that guy that ultimately gets that practice squad spot. And if I get backtrack of one thing we said as well there, as you talk about what they could be adding, swing tackle is a position. Larry Borum was somebody they valued as that swing tackle. He goes down with the injury. He goes to injured reserve. Matt Pryor is your swing tackle for now, and he does have some veteran experience, but I think they'll be scouring the market for a swing tackle potentially.
Yeah, and I like Matt Pryor, what we saw from him in the preseason.
Amagaje thought of as a guy who could develop into that, but he's been injured all offseason.
Yeah,
hasn't
had
a chance
to work.
Opportunity
to prove anything. So you want to keep him around, but you can't count on him to be ready for early regular season games. He's been hurt the entire time so far.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm surprised. Maybe it's the Dante Pettis injury that opens the door for Velus a little bit. And DeAndre Carter, I wasn't sure that there was a spot for both DeAndre Carter and Velus Jones Jr.
I'm not sure that there is. my guess is the Bears are going to try to add some more offensive line depth. It's got to fall right. They got to see a guy they like. You don't want to just bring somebody in who hasn't been here just because it's a body. But if they see somebody on the waiver wire, if they see somebody who gets released because of some cap issues or something like that,
yeah.
I can't imagine they're not going to continue to scour the earth as much as possible to find more depth on the O-line.
The whole earth? Like, where would you go?
I mean, perhaps even outer space. I think you would preferably look elsewhere. You know, if there's an O-lineman on Mars.
So maybe it's Space Jam, Bill Murray, that they have. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
So there's
at least Richard Dreyfuss wasn't there to run him off in Space Jam.
Purity Matt wonders, is this Mad Dog and Glory era Bill Murray? Ooh, is that what we're talking about? That's a similar era to what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's not St. Vincent Bill Murray. That guy can't play for me.
Didn't end up seeing that one, but
St. Vincent?
It didn't appeal to me in the previews, was it?
Yeah, thoughtful. Okay. Nice work.
I'd kind of phased out of my Bill Murray time by the time we got to St. Vincent.
Yeah, you know, that's more of a Lost in Translation kind of thing. It's an extension of Lost in Translation, Bill Murray, on that one. All right, Chris Emma, this is nonsense. Anything else from you before we let you go? Do you have any other thoughts of consequence at all, Chris?
How about Groundhog's Day, Bill Murray?
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Good to talk to you.
So that's a good submission late.
Those two on the nose. No, good stuff, Chris. Thank you very much.
Movie.
Yeah, Daniel Norris enjoys that one. Appreciate you. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. You can read Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, Chris.
Got the Zoom log off.
I think when the new show starts, whatever it may be, whenever it may be,
each
of us should be able to decide three or four things that either drops wise we don't play anymore, or three or four things that we can't say anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think we should get to decide that.
I mean, you don't get to decide what I can and can't say.
No, that's what I'm saying.
No,
we each get to decide what the other person can't say anymore.
I know that you want to outlaw me saying the Odyssey. I mean, Audacity or something. You want to outlaw that?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. No. I mean, here's the thing. Certain joys in life cannot be removed.
Okay.
You know, like, after every, the first song of every Tributosaurus concert, do you know what I say? After every single time we play the first song, I've done this for 22 years.
I've seen you a few times.
First song gets played, and I immediately say at the end of it, I say, good night, everybody. Thanks so much. Thank you. You guys have been great, right?
Does it slay them every time?
No, it doesn't, Ant.
Okay.
It does not.
It's for an audience of one.
It slays them. It slays some of them now, but we are going on year 22 of this, and I am leaning in hard. I am staying committed. Some people laugh. Some people groan. Some people who used to groan now laugh again.
Okay.
I'm in it for the continued evolution of the way that joke feels. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Just the other day, we drove by Ruben's school, and anytime he's in the car, we drive by, I always say, you know what we should do? We should just leave you here, and then you can just, you know, wait until the school opens. Mm-hmm. And every single time. It's probably now in his life 30, 35, maybe 40 times I've made that joke. He groans. He doesn't like it. I don't care. It makes me laugh so damn hard. So I am committed to some of these kinds of jokes.
To the audacity of your own humor.
The Odyssey / audacity of it is not going anywhere. 312-644-6767 is how you can reach us via text or via phone. Want to get your thoughts on these Bears roster moves. If you've got any thoughts on them, you want to hop in, you can do so right now. By the way, download the Odyssey app, or the Audacity app, I forget. Search for 670 The Score. Tap follow to receive alerts on our Bears coverage. If you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with David Haw and Dan Wiederer, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of the new season. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Couple things for you. One, I brought it up earlier and we've got some text saved and we can get some new thoughts on it. Name me a subtle way that your Bears fan existence has changed because Caleb Williams is here. Because there's a couple from earlier on in the day I want to get to, a couple things that have come to mind. A subtle change to your Bears fan existence that exists now because Caleb Williams is here. And then Anthony Herron had Shane Reardon do a research project, and Anthony Herron has taken out a highlighter and highlighted some things on that research project for a Bears-related topic that we will get to in a matter of moments as well. It's Score Afternoons. It's Spiegs and Ann Herron here on 670 The Score. He is Anthony Herron. I am Matt Spiegel. It is 670 The Score. A reminder that the Cubs are in Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates. Pregame coverage begins at 5:05 with the first pitch at 5:40 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Several of you texted in on the topic of how your Bears fan existence has changed, even if subtly, now that Caleb Williams is here. Someone a little bit earlier said that I just bought a new Bears polo because of my Caleb Williams excitement. Went out to the store, bought himself a Bears polo. Do you not work for the Bears, sir? Are you in the on the administrative staff?
Sometimes, Speaks, Dad's just, we transition into team-issued team polos, okay? It's just what it is when you're
really?
Dad. Yeah, I hope this person's a dad. You know?
You do?
But I bet he is.
My
yeah.
God. And sir, do you work for Fox Sports Locals?
You age out of the jerseys, you know? You don't want to do the jersey thing, so you do team polo. What's the big deal?
I mean, I guess nothing. I guess it's fine. You know what it is? I don't have the physique for a polo shirt. You know? I don't. I don't wear them. If it's a golf outing, I
didn't
always
know this about you, that you don't wear polos.
No, I do not.
Okay.
I do not. I like button-downs.
Yeah.
Like some T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
But not polos,
okay.
You know. I dread the golf outings with the required polo wear. It's just not my thing. But that's one way. Tanny, do you own? Are you saying you own the team issue
not
polo?
Not me, no. I would never. Yeah,
Shane, I would never.
Shane, you buying that? To me, it sounds
no.
Like,
not in a second. This guy's king of the polos over here. You should see his polo closet at home.
Yeah, he's got a huge polo closet.
Blackhawks polo, I Bears understand. Polo, White Sox polo.
This texter said it's uncomfortable to actually consider Bears players at their respective fantasy football draft rank. Yeah, it's true. Mm. Like, I saw that. I'm in my Guillotine League draft right now with the great Paul Charchian, a delightful man.
Dangerous.
That's a fun league. It's a fun style.
You get beheaded when you lose?
No, your team does not exist. You finish dead last, your team gets absorbed into the free agent ranks, and you're gone. You're done. So it starts with 18
okay.
teams
uh-huh.
or 19, whatever it
so
is.
So then, like, once the regular season ends, other people can claim your players for the playoffs?
No, there is a playoff component. It's a different thing, but it's okay. just a regular season league. But, like, week four, four teams have been chopped.
Oh, really?
And
so just weekly?
Weekly. You're done. So you're out.
Wow.
And so all of a sudden.
How many teams are in this league?
17, 18,
okay.
something like that. You
wow.
know? And by the end, you know, so by the middle of the season, the rosters are unbelievable.
Oh, okay.
The free agent, like, right. Hey, Mahomes just got cut. You know what I mean? If your team is bad,
right.
you get chopped.
That's
and all of your players become free agents. It's really fun. Go to guillotineleagues.com. But
you should have floated that to Nico earlier. I wonder what kind of league he had.
Yeah, right? I don't know.
Guillotine League.
Guillotine League is cool. Okay. But yeah, like, so Keenan Allen, they're like suggesting you draft Keenan Allen early. I'm like, it's hard for me to imagine that he'll have just enough. But that's because DJ Moore is there and because I like Roma Dunze as well. So who are you supposed to draft? You know what I mean? So these are subtle ways that your Bears fan existence has changed. And we'll keep mixing those in. But Ant, you asked for some research, and you have in your hands, that's a list.
Not exactly true, but I do have I have it available.
That's a list over there
mm-hmm.
of all of the greatest defensive ends around the NFL, and then over here, that's Montez. You find yourself wondering how Montez Sweat's usage compares to other defensive ends around the league, because we brought it up yesterday.
Right, and it became a bit of a, I guess, a concern at times last season while the Bears were scuffling at different points and the defense was starting to emerge and winning games and losing games and some of those inconsistencies. And so in the evaluation afterwards, there was certainly something that came up just wondering, well, why was Montez Sweat out for that series? How come Montez needed rest here or there? And defensive line is an extremely taxing position. It is the most physically taxing position on the field, the least mentally taxing position on the field. So there are going to be times where guys got to step out and take a break. The best defensive fronts in football can come at you in waves. They can throw a bunch of different bodies at you. And by comparison to some of the other top guys in the business, you know, you look at...
Hey, fellas, real quick, let's go to our list. Let's see how we did.
Ooh, let's go.
All right. Good.
List time.
People
list
are excited
season.
Around these parts.
Uh-huh, as they should be. So the defensive lineman in football that has the highest percentage
Ooh.
Of snaps played from last season... Max Crosby. Max Crosby was on the field by percentage more than any other defensive lineman in
football.
Really?
So more than any interior guy, more than anybody?
Yep, 95% of the snaps did Max Crosby play last season in Las Vegas.
Wow.
And he plays hard, he plays with energy. Now he's a guy who's a little more of a finesse defensive end. He's not in there, you know, taking on double teams. He's not bumping down over the guard at any points. But as far as just being on the field and just kind of playing with your hair on fire, Max Crosby does play with a lot of energy. He played 95% of the snaps. Only other guy at 90% or above, Aiden Hutchinson of the Detroit Lions. Aiden Hutchinson at 90% of the snaps.
Damn, that is really high.
That is enormously high.
That is a really high percentage. Because do you have Montez's percentage? Because
yes.
We know that Matt Eberflus likes to bring the D linemen in waves, more like they do it in Philly, where they've got they're so deep on that D line by design. So I'll be looking forward to you getting there. But that is a really high number for Aiden Hutchinson and Detroit.
And for players who are as consistently as productive as both of them are, especially Max Crosby and Hutchinson, even though the sack numbers can ebb and flow a little bit, but you see the production in the way that he impacts things versus the run and against the pass. Derrick Brown of the Carolina Panthers, an interior defensive lineman, plays 89% of the snaps. And absolutely fantastic football player is Derrick Brown. Kayvon Thibodeau of the New York Giants plays 87% of the snaps as a defensive end with the Giants. Again, maybe a guy who's a little more of a finesse player, doesn't play with the physical brand.
Very high draft pick, though. Very high draft pick.
Yeah, high draft pick who the Giants have been pleased with so far. Aaron Donald, at this point in his career, coming off of last season, well, I guess what the percentage was for Aaron Donald snaps played last year?
Mm-hmm.
81%.
Man.
Aaron Donald was on the field for 81% of the snaps for the Rams last year. So you go past a few other names, guys like Jonathan Allen and Nick Bosa.
Where's Nick Bosa? Because that's a sort of a dream comp in terms of production for Montez Sweat, right?
Nick Bosa, San Francisco last season, played 75% of the snaps for the 49ers. So that's still a very high percentage because we picture wanting like every key moment in the game, every key situation. Say you play 60 snaps of defense in a game. People in their minds are thinking like, hey, your best player should never leave the field. They should never get tired. There's a 10-play drive. Some guys should be out there for 10 consecutive plays. It is not always that simple, and the majority of guys who play on the defensive front are not able to sustain that level of effort that you want. And we know effort is a huge thing for Matt Eberflus. He doesn't just want you being there if the ball's in your zone. He wants you chasing the football like a madman. And this relates to me to part of the reason why Montez Sweat has been having the style of training camp that he's been having. So by comparison to the other names that I mentioned here, Montez Sweat was at 69% of the snaps played for the Bears last year.
So that's Montez.
Oh, we finally got there.
And now
it's fun. And isn't it fitting that 69% of the snaps is what you get with Montez.
Last season on That's Montez. Montez Sweat was on the field 69% of the time. In 2024, season two, what will happen? Will Grandma Sweat let her grandson Montez go out there for more? We'll see on this season of That's Montez.
Hell yeah. I love this show.
It's going to be a crowd pleaser, I suppose. One way to view is that, Montez.
That's Montez?
Certainly hope so.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's a crowd pleaser.
I mean, the debut season, a lot of times when somebody comes out in their debut season, it's the best work. You never know what season two is going to hold.
No, it's true. You hope for it. You don't get a sophomore. Well, the writers, a lot of times the writers get poached. If a show is really good in year one, some of those guys then get poached. So we'll have to look and see. It can be tricky that way.
Right.
As long as Montez is still there. You know what I'm saying?
Their head writer did get sent away to L.A. He's working on, God, what the hell is it called? Everybody Loves Khalil Mack.
All right. We'll see how that goes.
This is no longer the Yes And Show, I guess, huh? The one guy goes to TV and all of a sudden you're just leaving me out there to dry.
No. It's
the hell, Ant.
I know, speak.
He's trying. He's all right. He nodded. He nodded.
After we did the first one, I turned to Tanny. I was like, have we done the bit with Ant? I don't know if he gets the bit of that's Montez.
And I said, Ant definitely gets the bit.
How do you not get the bit?
I mean,
how do you not?
The bit itself is obvious. Yes. I was waiting on Speaks for the yes and.
He did the yes. He was waiting for me for the end.
For the and as well.
Hawkeroo, and we'll be back.
Be back with another exciting episode.
That's exactly right, Hawk.
The way that that Montez Sweat ends up playing the game, we saw the effort increase during his time last year with the Bears, but I don't think he was accustomed to playing the style of play that Matt Eberflus wanted from him. So to me, I think this percentage is going to increase this year, and it's a part of why we would hear reports out of training camp that like they couldn't block Montez Sweat. They couldn't stop him from playing with such effort and chasing Caleb Williams down, knocking the ball out of his hand. They got to remove him from drills and all this stuff.
Woo.
I think he is getting more accustomed to the style of play that's being demanded of him by the Chicago Bears. And, you know, be a guy who's as productive as he was in the percentage of snaps that he played, to get yourself in the condition that you need to suit the philosophy of Matt Eberflus's defense, then to me, my theory is we're going to see a Montez Sweat that plays well above 70% of the snaps and continues the same type of, at times, almost reckless effort and abandon that he plays the game with. So it should be pretty exciting to me to hear about how training camp went for him and to see by comparison to some of the other top players in the business right now that he does have room to grow with the amount of time he spends on the field.
Man, see, that's cool to think about because there's been so much going on with Caleb and so much going on with thinking about the other side of that defensive line and getting excited about the secondary and stuff. I've kind of, I don't want to say taken Montez for granted. I mean, Granny did that one time, which led to a very special episode where Montez had to step up for himself. And no, but like to think about that there's room to grow. And not just in terms of overall snap percentage like you're talking about, but stylistically, that's exciting to think about. Give us more on that, because you think he was used to playing a little bit more sparingly in Washington, or what has changed between the way that he was utilized in Washington and the way that now, with an offseason and a full training camp under his belt and the comfort level with Eberflus and with Eric Washington, in terms of the style that we're going to see from Montez?
It was a deep defensive front, you know, a lot of first round picks spent on that D line in Washington, and the production at times was there, but it never has struck me in recent years as a group that just plays the game consistently hard, you know, especially Chase Young. You know, Chase Young is a guy with this immense physical potential.
Yes.
And he's been productive at times, NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year when he first came out. But he's been banged up. He's been injured. And as a group, it seems like it has struck me as a group of defensive linemen in Washington that's been more about the occasional splash play than how an entire defense can benefit from that group. Snap in, snap out, looking to dominate, looking to play as hard as they can. That's more the philosophy, more the mentality, more the culture that Matt Eberflus has tried to foster here in Chicago, and is a part of what makes his defense so imposing between the way they finished last season and what we've seen from them early during this preseason phase here. So if you get that mentality and have Montez Sweat now in even better physical condition to be able to sustain that throughout a higher percentage in game, then you don't only get it from Montez. You get it from the rest of the guys up front, where the coaching points of when the ball gets thrown, you chase the ball like a banshee.
Yeah.
You know, you get out of the stack and swiftly run downfield just in case there's a possibility of you making a play, chasing it down from the backside, just like some of those great Bears defenses that we saw in the first decade of the 2000s. That's the temperament that it seems like they've tried to foster here. And I don't want to see Montez playing 90-95% of the snaps. I don't think you should need that from your great players unless you don't have a deep group. You know, Max Crosby is not on a deep defensive line with the Raiders. Max, you go ahead and take a few plays off. You can take those plays off on the field. You don't need to come to the sideline.
Sure.
You got to rest on occasion, take a couple off.
Also, if you're any good, you've got leads, and you can take a little bit of foot off the gas of some of your big boys at that point.
Right. I mean, that's the hope. But even if you don't, if you're on a deep D line, you should be able to come at that opponent in waves, say, you know what, Darrell Taylor is our situational pass rusher. If there's occasionally a third down where Montez isn't on the field because he needs a blow,
and
we can put Taylor on the field because he's a guy who knows how to sack the quarterback, now you're in a better position to do that. So that's what you hope to build your defensive front to, that guys are comfortable playing as hard as they possibly can, knowing that if they take a rest, you can still get a high level of production.
That's really good stuff from our guy Anthony Heron. It's Spiegs and Ant Heron here on The Score. Some more of your texts and thoughts about how life has changed in subtle ways now that Caleb Williams is here. And what's it like to scout him as a defensive coach? Our defensive coach on staff gave those thoughts. We'll bring them to you next here on 670 The Score. Your texts and phone calls, always welcome and part of the action here in the afternoons on The Score. By the way, baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Justin Steele and the Cubs going up against the Pittsburgh Pirates later on. But your texts about life with Caleb Williams have been really good. Here's one from Scott in Woodstock. My Bears perspective has become my same feeling I had for the Cubs around 2014. I'm confident we can get rid of the quarterback curse, like the Cubs World Series curse was broken. That's Scott in Woodstock. How about that? Comparing the 2014 Cubs vibes to the 2024 Bears vibes. And this text, enjoyed as a dad, the perception of my boys, my two young boys, actually has changed because they love the dynamics of Justin Fields, and he caused them to really watch the game closely. They thought nothing could be better, but then come along Caleb Williams, and they see how he throws, they see how he plays. They're even beyond excited for the season now, even more so than the Fields era because of the play exhibited already by Caleb. So that is incredible for me. That's pretty cool as a dad that he's got kids that are feeling it as they've been watching Caleb.
Yeah, I like the sounds of that. I mean, it's a city on the whole that is certainly feeling it, that's ready, that's excited about what Caleb has the potential to do here with the Bears. And knowing that the roster around Caleb is in a position to maybe do something big as well helps.
Our staff defensive coordinator is Dave Wanstead, and he was on with the morning show, Mully and
DC.
This morning. Is that one of the three that you'd vote for to be removed? Shane, Mully, and
did he say only three?
I said three or four, and that number could rise. I've only been back for half a day so far.
Like, can we not talk about this stuff until Mike Francesa gets here? Let him decide what he wants on the show, okay?
Yeah, but no, for sure, that's one of them. Stop it.
Okay. All right. Good. How about that?
That one's fine.
That was okay. All right, cool. Well, here's Coach Wanstead on, as a defensive coordinator, having watched all of training camp, some practices up close with his good buddy Flutes, and of course the games, how he scouts the Bears quarterback.
I think you got to keep him in the pocket. If you're pressuring him, particularly to his right side, you know, he's got the ability. We've seen him make throws to the right and left, but boy, whenever you're rushing them, I'm going to make sure that my left defensive end, or if I'm blitzing, my left outside blitzer, that he is keeping Caleb in the pocket, because the guy is really, really good when he's on the move outside the pocket making big throws. That would be the number one thing. It'll be curious to see, do they try and pressure him, or do they try to cover him? You know, the old NFL way of doing it over the years is you pressure the young, inexperienced quarterbacks and you cover the experienced ones, the good ones. You know, you never blitz Dan Marino as an example, because the ball was coming out so quick, you're wasting your time. You would pressure the young, inexperienced quarterbacks. Caleb falls into that category, but he's light years ahead of where a rookie quarterback would be from a mental approach, from football knowledge, in my opinion. So that's going to be the biggest thing I see, you know, is when they play Tennessee, does Tennessee feel that, do they feel they need to blitz because, you know, to get pressure against our offensive line, or – you know, will they just cover pressure? I mean, who knows? That's going to be the big thing, I think, that we have to keep an eye on in that opener.
That's fun to think about. In terms of the blitzing, would he be able to hit all the hot reads and hit folks right away? But what he's saying about keeping him in the pocket, I wonder if some teams are just kind of, you know, they're kind of send pressure, but tell him to kind of be a little careful and try to contain him in the pocket. What would you do?
I mean, each defensive coordinator kind of just has what they're known for. So if you're a blitzing guy, you're going to blitz Caleb because you just like to blitz. That's what you're more comfortable doing. If you're a coverage guy, then you're likely to lay players back. But I tend to think that with a young player, you make them make a quick decision. So I like the idea of pressuring. And, you know, even if you're not a high blitz rate guy, you can move the front just to kind of change the look on them in the front seven and force them to move their feet in the direction that you want them to be moved in. So I'm usually of the mindset that if you got a young QB back there, force him to think fast, then you allow your secondary to take a few chances.
If you just missed the news of the day earlier, the Bears waived a bunch of players, they released a bunch of players, placed some players on reserve injured list designated for return. That includes Larry Borum, who's going to be out for at least the first four games, so not exactly sure who the swing tackle is on that offensive line. If you're one of those people who follows closely on the swing tackles, Velus Jones Jr. made the team. Both of the quarterbacks behind the first two, Brett Rypien, got released, and Austin Reed was waived. So we'll see if either or both are attempted to be put back on the practice squad because they've enjoyed the quarterback room.
Velus Jones Jr. survived this round of cuts. I don't know for sure that he's made the team yet. I'm trying to think through my logical mind. And again, Velus Jones has a lot of physical abilities, and he's fun with the football in his hands. In the end, is he one of the guys that puts you in the best position to win games this season? I feel like there's a configuration of the roster where you could say, there's other guys who makes more sense. But Dante Pettis being hurt, Colin Johnson being hurt, Roschon Johnson missing a bunch of time in the preseason, yeah, all those things help Velus Jones still be on the roster right now.
Yeah, Dante Pettis placed on the reserve injured list, so he's going to be out for the entire season. So you've lost Dante Pettis for the year. And we'll have to see what happens with some of the moves between now and Tuesday, if those moves indeed will affect Velus Jones Jr. Daniel Hardy made the team. Dominique Robinson made the team. And again, these are all, you know, the first 53. So we'll see if anything happens between now and Tuesday. But yeah, man, it feels like football season. That's for damn sure. But baseball rolls on. And Ian Happ leads off for the Cubs tonight against Jarrett Jones, the very, very good young rookie pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Everybody in that Cubs lineup had a hit, and everybody in that Cubs lineup scored a run as of last night. Happ, Talkman in right field. Suzuki is the DH. Bellinger at first base as Michael Bush gets a start off. Isak Paredes at third. Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Pete Crow Armstrong, and Miguel Amaya round out the bottom of that lineup. Anthony, it's been fun with you the last couple days, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, agreed. It's always a blast, man. I'm going to be headed to Iowa City this weekend. I got my first college football broadcast of the season.
What's the game?
The Iowa Hawkeyes. They're going to be hosting Illinois State. So I got that game Saturday on the Big Ten Network at 11 a.m. Central Time. Always fun to go back to Kinnick when I get to call a game there. Turn around going to Canton on Sunday. I got the Black College Hall of Fame Classic on Westwood One. I assume there's a chance that that's on this station. I know we tend to carry a variety of feeds here on the Score and on the Audacity app. I'm sorry.
It's my guy. Odyssey. It's my guy right there.
So who knows? You'll be able
to
hear me.
I think we became a team today.
One of the affiliates is somewhere. I'll be doing that on Sunday evening before I return to our fair city of Chicago.
Go back to Greece. You don't like it? Go back to Greece.
What I'm not going
to
do is use Guagi on the air. Just the way my brain works, I can't bring myself. Even it's crossed my mind a couple
Come
of
on,
times.
Ant.
It's crossed my mind a couple of times. When a producer says things in my ear, I'm like, I got to find a different way to say that. Even if that sounds good, I got to say it differently. Just
now,
because it got said there.
I'm going to find the highest profile game you have this year. Got to circle that one.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to force feed that one into the broadcast.
He's going to text me.
Are you an ally
Guagi,
or not? Are you on the team
say
or not?
Say Guagi right now. Say Guagi right now.
Say it right now. Right now. One time. One time.
And say kink in the armor. Say kink in the armor. And bondage.
We do not kick shame.
Bondage. Sex swings.
Thank you so much to our guests on the show. Dustin Rhodes, there was no kink in his armor whatsoever earlier on today.
Did that sound better than the correct version? I don't know.
I think so.
Did.
I think it was actually a good idea.
Okay.
Nico Horner, thank you so much to Nico, who was on the show and was terrific as always. And Chris Emma, our guy from 670 The Score and 670thescore.com with all the Bears cuts. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are. each and every day.
They're saying an outlaw those.
It's got to change.
Parkins impressions.
Shane Reardon executively produces the hell out of this program every single day. And Anthony Herron, you've been great. Thank you so much. Me and Mark Brody tomorrow. Caleb Williams is on this show tomorrow.
Caleb Williams.
After the Cubs play. Caleb Williams at 4 o'clock. On this show tomorrow, tell a friend
that
or
guy Williams.
That's him. That's him. He's going to be on the show. We'll play that drop for him. For Anthony Herron, I'm Matt Spiegel. Thanks so much for listening to 670 The Score.
Listen, of course it feels great. I'll be honest with you, I'm exhausted. So, like, I just, you know, I want to go home, put the feet up, drink a beer, and, just, you know, so it feels real good. I'm just proud of them. I really am.